In verses 15 through 26, one of the, we'll just sort of segue, that's where we were majoring at the end last week, on the woman's question regarding worship, which emerges out of this context of the five husbands, the five false gods of the Samaritans, and Jesus introducing a new era. And you'll remember the picture on the back of Gerizim and Ebal. That's what the mountains are on the back. On the left is Mount Gerizim. And this is where, if you'll recall, Deuteronomy 27, 28, where Israel was announcing the blessings and the curses back and forth, and half the people stood on one mountain, half the people stood on the other, right? So Gerizim, on Gerizim, would be the ruins of a temple that was the Samaritan temple of worship. It was destroyed by John Hyrcanus in the Maccabean era. So a Judean destroyed the Samaritan temple. And so that's kind of in the back. This picture is taken from Jacob's Well area. So in the background, you know, while they're having this conversation, she's either looking over Jesus' shoulder or he's looking over her shoulder. And in the backdrop is, well, you see what happened over here? You know, our fathers say that worship happens on this mountain. You guys say it's over on this mountain, right? So which is it? And what Jesus does here, of course, is say there's a whole new era of worship, which is been the desire of the Father, and it's not confined to a location, right? Yeah, you look at your question.
No, it's just a coincidence that, well, it may have been intentional coincidence.
A providential
coincidence that this woman was married to five men, and there's an analogy between the five men that this woman was married to and the five gods that this
That's correct. Had. That's correct.
That was completely lost on me. When I read five husbands,
until
I read this, I didn't know that that was it.
I think there's a connection. I might be stretching it a little bit, but I actually think that that's why there's this question about worship. See, some people, when they read this, Jesus, you know, sort of says, you know, go call your husband. And she says, well, I don't have a husband. And he says, well, you've had five. And the fellow you're with right now isn't your husband. And then she immediately says, our fathers worshipped on this mountain. And some people go, see, that's an evasive tactic. She's trying to move from my sins to theology in general. All right? You know, and of course there are, you know, you've probably had that experience with people. You know, somebody wants to raise a thorn. Well,
let's change
the subject. What do you think about predestination? You know, or something like that. Well, actually, I think what's going on here is a little bit different than that. I think it's a little more shrewd. I think the Samaritan woman is the Samaritan theologian. I think she knows her history, and she understands the way that the people of Judea viewed their worship as false, and these five idols, these five gods, and they failed the Samaritans. And so the note on that is back in 2 Kings 17. So, but that said, that doesn't mean that the five husbands aren't literal. She has had five husbands, and in that sense, this woman has embodied in her life Samaria's history. She is that in the same way that she represents all of us. Remember, going back, Jesus has been introduced at the end of John chapter 3 by John the Baptist as the bridegroom. And as soon as he's introduced as the bridegroom, he is then immediately seen, that's the very end of chapter 3, and then he's immediately at a well with a woman. And we looked at all those Old Testament references to a woman at the well being met by Jacob, being met by, previously by Abraham's servant Gehazi, and getting a bride for Rebecca, getting Rebecca for Isaac. And then later Moses meets his wife at the well. And so this notion of the deliverer bridegroom coming to the well and meeting the future bride is very strongly at the back of this story of what's going on. So in a way, she represents what happened to Israel. Israel was a faithless bride, remember? And so they get carried off into captivity. And that's what happens with the Samarian region, is they're the first to go. Judah goes later. But then Jesus comes on the scene, as Jeremiah had prophesied, to make a new covenant. And he says, it won't be like the old covenant that I made with them, even though I was my covenant that they broke, even though I was a husband to them. Jeremiah 32. And so you've got now a new covenant being made. So Jesus is sitting with the bridegroom and the bride figure going on here. And this issue of worship here is, and the fact that it's a Samaritan, it's in the context of the Samaritans in which worship arises, is very important. Okay, because now worship is in the Spirit. And you remember last week we looked at that phrase and we said, that shows up again in the book of Revelation, where John says, this is chapter 1, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. And I heard a voice, and I turned to see the voice that was speaking with me, and I saw seven golden lampstands, and in the midst of the lampstands, one like a son of man. He goes into that description of Jesus, the resurrected Lord. What it said there, then, in Revelation 1 and 5, if we go over there for just a second, a couple of verses here in the book of Revelation on what happens in salvation in reference to worship. We want to make this connection. Revelation 1, verse 5 and 6. This is a revelation from Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, the ruler of the kings of the earth, to him who loves us and released us from our sins by his blood. So that's usually about as much gospel as gets preached. He loves us. He's released us from our sins by his blood. But watch what happens next in verse 6. He's made us to be a kingdom, priests to his God and Father. To him be glory and the dominion forever and ever. So actually, what happens in salvation isn't simply